Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
One pitch. Fastball pulled and passed. Alvarez is toward the corner.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Adam, Scott, Heath, and Chris.
Busy Wednesday in Major League Baseball, and here we are on Thursday, June 27th. Yeah! Starting to get better at that. Starting to get better at knowing the date. Welcome to Fantasy Baseball Today. Yeah, it's a big step for me, Scott. You know, I'm very proud. Thank you for acknowledging.
Yeah, it's a rare talent. It's a rare talent, knowing what day it is just offhand. I mean, I don't. Yeah. I wouldn't have said 27th. Shoot.
Right. No. Well, look, I knew it was Thursday, right? And I knew my birthday was on a Wednesday, and you didn't wish me a happy birthday on my birthday last week. Mm. And so I just added 7 plus 1,
yeah.
And I got to the 27th. So that's kind of how it works. Like, listen, got a busy, busy show,
proud of
Scott.
You. Proud
Thank
of
you. You. Thank you. I've been working on it. You know, you hone your craft. So 15 games and a lot of runs. A lot of runs means a lot to talk about in fantasy baseball. But if I know Scott, just based on the conversations we've had lately, he's going to come on. He's going to tell you how extremely concerned he is about Chris Sale after this bad start. Like, I know it. Scott's just going to be really concerned about Chris Sale. Who else is Scott going to be super concerned about? Matt Boyd. He's going to be super concerned about Matt Boyd. Right? Am I on the money, Scott?
Yeah, I don't know how well you know me. No. I don't even, like, the thing is, in this environment, I don't even feel like 5 runs in 6 innings with 10 strikeouts, which is what Sale had, is even that bad, because it could get so much worse.
No, I was kidding.
I mean, in the case of him, 10 strikeouts, it's 9 of 11 starts now with double-digit strikeouts, so.
No, look, I knew you wouldn't be concerned, because remember the whole Snell thing? If you weren't concerned about Snell, I knew you weren't going to be concerned about Snell or Sale. So, all right, let's talk about last night. Let's talk about Wednesday's standouts. I want to know if you're buying in to Wade LeBlanc. The opener has revived Wade LeBlanc. 4 of his last 5 appearances have been really, really good. The other one was terrible. He is 10% owned. He is RPE eligible, I'm sure. And are you buying it yet?
Well, I knew when I saw this performance he had yesterday that Adam was going to be making his Wade LeBlanc pitch again. I didn't expect you to open the show with it. That's a new low for you.
What? I don't own Wade LeBlanc. I'm not making a pitch for Wade LeBlanc. I am simply bringing him up because he needs to be brought up. Jerk.
I don't see anything he's doing that's different. And what's a pretty extensive track record, 34 years old. There's nothing in the underlying numbers to make me think he's changed in some way and we should have this faith in him all of a sudden. So no, I'm not even interested in picking him up in a hot hand play necessarily, because I mean, say you did that with Mike Leake, how did that go?
Yeah, it didn't go very well. All right, so if you are not impressed with my opening the show with Wade LeBlanc, you get to now open the show and talk about someone even more important, more awesome. What do you got?
There's
so
such
easy.
A big selection here.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you one pitcher who has me worried, and to the point that I'm probably going to drop him now. And it depends how. It depends what's out there.
Can I guess?
But Nick Pivetta.
Oh, that's what I was going to guess. Yeah.
That was really what you were going to guess?
Well, it was either going to be him or Framber Valdez. It was one of those two.
Well, the thing about both of them were in I wrote waiver wire winners and losers. It's going up this morning. Both of them are among the losers. Framber Valdez actually got opted to the minors after the game, but they don't need a fifth starter, the Astros, until after the All-Star break. So he's not necessary. He didn't necessarily lose his job just because he got sent down. I do still think there is some interesting stuff underneath for Valdez that, I'm not necessarily going to bury him, but I don't necessarily think he's worth a roster spot either. But Nick Pivetta, a third straight shaky start. He allowed 2 home runs again. That's 7 in his past 3 starts, and that's really the killer for him. Is just way too vulnerable to the home run and not a good enough bat misser. Even when he's been good, he hasn't shown high end enough bat missing ability to think he's going to be good enough to overcome this deficiency he seems to have. So I'm pretty much over him. I think there's, you know, I'd rather hold on to him than over somebody like Wade LeBlanc. But if I was looking to pick up like Adbert Alzolay or even somebody like Julio Urias, I, you know, if there's another upside pitcher available on waivers to you, or if there's a hitter you want more, I think dropping Pivetta for him or Valdez for him at this point makes sense.
Okay, and Pivetta is 68% owned. Valdez is 62% owned. Pivetta is a two-star pitcher next week. That makes it a little bit more complicated, but one of those starts is at Atlanta. That's a brutal matchup. At Atlanta and at the Mets next week, and that's who we faced yesterday, the Mets, and he gave up 4 runs on 9 hits and 5 2/3. And I was watching that start, and he just did not seem to have it. Sometimes you watch Nick Pivetta, and he's totally nasty, and yesterday was not one of those starts. In fact, Jason Vargas was better than Nick Pivetta, and, you know, didn't nobody got challenged to a fight with reporters in the clubhouse after. That's always good. But, yeah, all right, so Pivetta, I mean, I think, like, if you want to pivot maybe to Logan Allen, he's got two starts also next week, San Francisco at home at the Dodgers. But would you do that? Would you drop Pivetta for Logan Allen?
Yeah, I'd be more willing to roll the dice on Allen, who hasn't shown anything that impressive in his first two starts, but top 100 prospect coming into the season. And, you know, they were both fine. They were both fine. They were reason enough to want to give him a longer look, and we'll see where that one goes.
Okay, and we'll talk about Zach Allen in a little bit, as he had a pretty interesting start yesterday. He was cruising along, and then he got lit up a little bit. Do I have a standout? Well, I think Dallas Keuchel's a standout. We're going to play start, sit, or drop with Keuchel and Darvish, who started yesterday. What do you want to talk about hitters like J.P. Crawford, Willy Adames and his splits? Jeff McNeil is on fire. Franmil Reyes, double dong. Justin Bour has been excellent. Like, Justin Bour is part of a group of guys who might be earning more playing time and might be becoming more interesting. So usually we talk a lot about pitchers on this show. I'm going to try to talk about hitters more today. We have the Thuriometer Thursday. James Paxton is on the Thuriometer, and I am very thuried because of that knee. Jack Flaherty is on the Thuriometer. He pitched two nights ago. Eugenio Suarez, Paul DeJong, and Matt Boyd. Matt Boyd has allowed 17 home runs this year, 10 in the month of June. He's at the White Sox at home against Boston next week, so we will discuss that. Let's move on. Today's sponsors are No Bull and SeatGeek. No Bull, go to NoBullProject.com, NoBullProject.com/FBT. This is a, you know, it's an apparel company. I got my No Bull package. Great gear for training. The shoes are awesome. And SeatGeek, the promo code is Fantasy for $10 off your first purchase. So if we can focus still on some of these fringy starting pitchers, we already talked about Pivetta and Valdez. Three others that went yesterday. Zach Allen gave up one hit and no runs through five innings. Then he came out for the sixth, and he got blasted. He gave up 4 runs without recording an out. So that's two starts now for Gallen where he's lasted five innings or five-plus innings, giving up 1 run and 3 runs. I said he gave up 4 runs. He gave up 3. 1 run against St. Louis last week, 3 runs against Washington. Pivetta, Framber Valdez, Matt Strom, and Tanner Roark, who we don't talk about much. He has a 3.66 ERA and a 1.31 whip, not great. How would you rank the rest of them? Gallen, Strom, and Roark.
Gallen, Strom, definitely Gallen won. I mean, if he hadn't come out for the sixth inning yesterday, he probably would have led the show. He was very impressive through those first five innings, and then, you know, gave up 3 hits and 3 runs before getting an out in the sixth. So, you know, that was the third time through the lineup. He talked some after the game about adjustments he feels like he needs to make when he faces the third time, the lineup for a third time again. And the Marlins seemed to come away mostly impressed. And I think we all should have come away mostly impressed by Zach Gallen's start yesterday. I think he definitely kept himself in the running with Caleb Smith looking to find his way back in. And he's somebody I'd absolutely pick up if he's still available, and certainly hold on to him if I already got him.
Yeah, enough
really
encouraging signs.
I don't
want
any of these others.
No? No Strom? Strom with a nice start?
I just I just made a case for dropping Pivetta and Valdez, and yet I think I'd rank them second and third here. Strom has his velocity was up a little yesterday, which is interesting. He had 9 strikeouts, but the swinging strikes weren't there, and even more discouraging than that, he gave up 2 home runs again, which this is now 6 straight starts with 2 home runs allowed. And particularly if your bat missing skills aren't that high. It's just like I was saying for Pivetta. Like, I feel like Pivetta would have to miss more bats to get away with that, and Pivetta misses more than Strom does. So Strom seems like you're playing with fire there. Roark is... he can be useful, I think. He's just kind of boring, and he gives up a lot of line drives, so the whip is high because he's given up a lot of hits, and I think that's not a fluky thing. I think he's that hittable. He pitches fairly deep into games. He's about at a strikeout per inning for the season. I think he can be a useful streamer, but there's not a lot of ceiling there.
Okay. So that's Tanner Roark, 48% owned. 4 quality starts this season. Doesn't pitch deep into games often. Getting better with that next week.
Okay. I even had that part wrong.
Matt Strom is a 2-star pitcher next week with San Francisco and at the Dodgers. Roark, 1 start with Milwaukee next week. So, getting excited for London baseball, Scott?
No? It's going to be interesting.
Yeah,
it's going to be interesting. Like it when I was doing the top 10 sleeper hitters and looking at the hitting schedule and picking out which teams had the best matchups, worst matchups, all of that, I noticed 2 days off in a row for the Yankees and Red Sox, and I was like, "What is this? I've never seen that before." Except for the All-Star break, of course. Now they've got an extra travel day to go to London. We have no idea what that playing environment's going to be like.
I do know what the dimensions are.
What are the dimensions?
I think it's 330 down the lines, but it's 385 to center field. 385. Now, they do have a high wall. They have a 16-foot wall in center field. It's in a soccer stadium. And there is a ton of foul territory. So it's just going to be weird. Like, it's very hitter-friendly in terms of the dimensions, the walls, you know, the distance of the walls. But the foul territory maybe equalizes it a little bit for the pitchers. I have a feeling it's going to be very high scoring. I know the Yankees are going with an opener on Sunday. The Red Sox, Sale just pitched. Price isn't pitching. I think they're going with Porcello and maybe Eduardo Rodriguez. We're not going to see the best pitchers, although it might be Tanaka tomorrow or Saturday. But yeah, they're off Thursday. They're off Friday. I think it's cool. I think it's very cool. And one thing I read on ESPN.com is that they're going to have, like, I think through the PA, they're going to have, like, in-game explanations for some things that happen. Because some of the fans there just don't know baseball very well. So I don't know what I don't know what that is. I don't know what they're going to explain, but I'm pretty interested to see where this goes. So we'll see. The times of the games are kind of funky, if I believe.
They're gonna be like old school color commentary guy, like, you know, giving you tips on how to play if you're like a little leaguer or something. Like, oh, this is exactly how you should do that. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
I don't know. It sounded like a better idea in my head. Let's move on.
Okay, let's move on. Let's do start, sit, or drop. And I only have 2 players with this segment. They faced each other last night, and the lines weren't great. Keuchel and Darvish. Keuchel has more of an excuse. Keuchel was pitching pretty well, 3 scoreless innings, then there was a 48-minute rain delay. And he came back out, and I think he gave up a run one run in 3 straight innings. So Keuchel ends up 5 2/3, 8 hits, 3 runs, 3 walks, 2 strikeouts. Darvish gave up a 3-run homer to Nick Markakis. He gave up 5 runs on 5 hits with 8 strikeouts, 2 home runs allowed against Atlanta. And he got the loss, and that ended a streak of 10 straight no decisions for Yu Darvish, which may have been a record. And by the way, he has not won at home since signing his contract with the Cubs. He has not won at Wrigley Field. But Keuchel and Darvish, start, sit, or drop, how are you treating them going forward?
Not drop. Probably more likely to sit than start, but few people listening, I think, have much pitching depth and may find themselves where they're forced to start them. The most concerning number for me for Keuchel is that he gave up two home runs yesterday. And I think it was one in his first start. But he's going to have to thrive on home run prevention. Like, that's going to have to be his whole thing.
Can I interrupt?
Extreme ground ball pitcher.
Can I interrupt? I am so excited.
Sure.
I'm so excited for the day. I'm going to have to get, like, some celebration music or something. Balloons. The day when you say what I said on yesterday's show, Dallas Keuchel should not be owned in 12-team leagues, should not be owned in 10-team leagues, obviously, and should only be owned in 14-team leagues if it's a points league. Like, I can't wait for everybody to come around on how bad Dallas Keuchel is going to be for fantasy.
Wow.
That's a bold take. It's a bold take, no question. But he just doesn't do anything good.
Thing to celebrate, too.
What? I mean, no, it's going to be celebrating.
Like, he's underwhelmed us in the past before because he set this Cy Young standard a few years ago. But I don't think we've ever since then considered him not must own. So that's interesting.
You know what, Scott? I'm gonna go. So last year we had Keuchel in our 16 team categories league. 16 teams. And I feel like we could never really start him or at least feel good about starting him because he was a categories killer. And his strikeout rate, this is another thing, his strikeout rate, like, you can kind of live with it being in the 7.5 range. But last year, I think it was 6.7. And so far this year, what does he have?
Yeah.
He has 5 strikeouts in 10 2/3. So, like, I don't know that you can live with a strikeout rate at 6.5, 6.7. That's kind of dicey. But you know what?
Well, in a way.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Like, our expectations from starting pitchers have had to be lowered this year. I mean, a high threes ERA is a good ERA. Even some of the high-end pitchers out there have ERAs close to 4, if not exceeding 4. And that's just that's just the new reality. If you look at basically every pitcher's home run to fly ball rate is, if not a career worst, it's much higher than last year. And that's kind of introduced this random element to every pitcher's start. Like, so many home runs are being hit, you just never know when an otherwise good pitcher is going to have a start sabotaged by that. And if Keuchel can be this elite home run preventer like he's always been, then he has a good chance of remaining about the same while the rest of the pitching pool gets worse. That he hasn't shown that through 2 starts, but it is only 2 starts.
Yeah. No.
I think he's going to be fine. I think he's going to be useful. I don't know that he's going to be must start. I don't know that I would start him. I don't know what his matchups are next time, but after the way these first 2 starts, I don't know that I'd start him then.
Philadelphia.
I do think he's going to be must out.
And Miami at home. Philadelphia and Miami at home.
In a 2-start week?
Yep.
I'd probably start him.
So, look, if you believe in Keuchel, certainly be patient. I mean, you could certainly understand the guy getting off to a slow start. I just don't know that his skills are really good for fantasy. That's a problem. He needs to pitch a lot of innings, which he has been in the past.
It's better in points than categories, yeah. I would say. But there just aren't. And I don't know the proper way to approach this. I don't know if it means in categories leagues where you don't have, you know, pitcher slots defined, SP and RP, you just put a P in there, and ones where, you know, there isn't a high minimum innings threshold to meet. Maybe it means not starting many starting pitchers and leaning on relievers, though I think you're playing with fire there too, because I haven't explored it as much, but I imagine the home run rates are up for relievers too. And, you know, somebody gives you a 4-run inning, that's going to crush your ratios. This is part of the reason I don't like that format. Like, just one over, if you're reducing it to a week's time, just one crooked number can really mess you up in ERA and WHIP.
Do you want to hear
in a way that loses the whole week for you, when that doesn't really happen as often in points league?
All right, got an email from Josh. He sent an email on March 25th, and he keeps emailing me almost weekly to update me on his team because I asked him to do this. And he said, "Adam and boys, I did it. I drafted no starting pitchers, and I plan not to start any starting pitchers this season. I play in a standard 5x5 12-team roto league, so it's not head-to-head categories. It's roto season-long. Typically 90 to 95 points wins the league. I haven't heard you talk much about the strategy. Any thoughts? How do you like my team?" So again, he did not draft any starters. And here were the pitchers he drafted. Jose Leclerc. I'll give you the bad ones first. Jose Leclerc, Brandon Morrow, Pedro Strop, Keone Kella. The other pitchers are Yates, Vasquez, and Craig Stammen. He emails me every week. He's in first place every week.
Okay.
So his hitting's very good. He has Grandal, Bellinger, Mondesi, Turner, Lindor, Harper, Soto, Gallo, Pete Alonso, among others. Senzel, Framil Reyes, Jeff McNeil. And you can obviously draft good hitting when you take this strategy. I'm sure he's juggled his pitching staff since then.
Yeah.
But I just thought it was interesting. I've been looking for a way to get this email into the show. And I guess, Scott, you gave me the perfect transition. But he did not draft one starting pitcher, and he's in first place, despite some of those relief pitchers actually being total busts. Interesting. Yeah. But
yeah,
what works for one person doesn't work for everyone.
And that's another thing, too. Like, at one point, in some of my deeper roto leagues, I picked up, like, John Brebbia for ERA and WHIP health. And that's completely imploded here over the past month. And, you know, I took a lot of the damage from that when I wasn't enjoying the successes earlier because, you know, I hadn't picked them up yet. Right. So the timing on that can get very tricky. I would imagine most roto leagues are set up so you couldn't just completely abandon starting pitchers because you have to meet a certain innings minimum. But I'm not convinced this isn't a more viable strategy than ever. Part of what makes it harder, too, is that, like, I'm going to call it the Ketel Marte syndrome, where, you know, loading up on hitters at the beginning doesn't necessarily give you that big of an advantage if somebody else happens to hit on a lot of the hitters who end up being just as valuable later in drafts, which is, you know, looking like a higher number than ever. Like there's so little room to differentiate yourself at hitter anymore that it's hard to get a clear advantage there. So there's a lot to consider here. It may be a more viable strategy than ever. It may be something I need to consider more strongly, but I'm not totally on board with it yet.
Yeah, no, look, it's a good point because hitting – the point of drafting all relievers is that you get to use early – there are several points. One of them is obviously you get to use early picks on hitters more so than the rest of your team or the rest of your league. But, okay, let's take a look at the best hitters in baseball so far, best hitters in fantasy. And you'll see a mix of high-end guys who were drafted early and guys who were drafted late or picked up as free agents. Christian Yelich, Cody Bellinger, Mike Trout, Freddie Freeman, Josh Bell – Nolan Arenado, Alex Bregman. So that's, I think, six of the first seven or seven of the first eight are very high.
And the others
picks.
You could have only realistically gotten one, right? Like you couldn't have drafted two of those players. Well, you could have drafted Bellinger maybe and somebody else. But otherwise.
Yeah, well, you could have drafted Yelich and Freeman.
Yelich.
Yeah, Freeman.
In second round, yeah.
Bregman, maybe. Yeah, you could have gotten two of those guys.
You could
have. Then it gets more interesting,
maybe,
though.
Yeah, if you did. Yeah, if you, but I mean, there would have been a lot of other hitters you would have considered at that same point. Bryce Harper, Manny Machado.
Then we got Xander Bogaerts, Pete Alonso, Ketel Marte, Mookie Betts, Carlos Santana, Eduardo Escobar, Ronald Acuna, Trevor Story, Rendon, Rizzo, Devers, LeMahieu, Whit Merrifield. So you see, there's still a lot of high.
Yeah, it gets all over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Scott, we got to take a break here on Fantasy Baseball Today. When we come back, we got news and notes. Giancarlo Stanton's back on the IL. Does that mean anything for Clint Frazier? Tim Anderson's on the IL with a high ankle sprain. It's Craig Kimbrell Day. So we got news and notes plus the thermometer and a whole bunch of hitters you need to know about. We'll be right back on Fantasy Baseball Today.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Giancarlo Stanton is cursed. It's very strange, but he's on the IL again with a sprained PCL. He will miss more than the minimum 10 days. The Yankees called up Mike Tauchman. I don't know that they won't call up Frazier when they get back from London, but for now, like, are you picking up Clint Frazier? Do you care?
It would have to be a deeper league. There's not an opening for him is the thing. They had one too many hitters for spots before Stanton going down. Now that Encarnacion is on board and now that Aaron Judge is back. So, you know, if they're committed to Brett Gardner, and I imagine they are, which is why they sent Clint Frazier down in the first place, if they're committed to Aaron Hicks, then there's not a spot.
Well, they sent Frazier down because of Stanton and Judge and I guess Encarnacion. Like Gardner was a
best player. Right, but Judge and Encarnacion are...
I imagine Gardner's back in the lineup playing left field. Tim Anderson on the IL with a high ankle sprain. Craig Kimbrell is going to be activated today. Is he a top five closer rest of season?
The high-end closers are all pretty good. I don't know exactly where he's going to fall there. He certainly could be top five. He could be number one rest of season, but I have him ranked lower just because there's no reason for me to move those others behind him yet. Like somebody like Felipe Vasquez, who you mentioned, has been great. If he gets traded somewhere where he's a closer, his ratios are dominant too. There's a lower number than ever of for sure closers out there, but the ones who are for sure are by and large pretty awesome.
Yeah, except I think we talked about this last time we ranked Kimbrel. The only ones that I would certainly put Kimbrel ahead of are the ones that I expect to get traded. Like I'd have to take Kimbrel over Will Smith because he's going,
yeah, you do.
He's going to get traded and hopefully he stays. He's so good. Hopefully he stays as a closer. Mm-hmm. Vasquez, I'm not sure about, but I could certainly see him getting moved. Remember, Jared Crick is a name to pick up. Lorenzo Cain has been dealing with a thumb injury.
Kyle Crick.
Thank you on the Pirates.
Yeah. Okay.
Just search for Crick, Watson and Crick. Lorenzo Cain's been dealing with a thumb injury, so that's been affecting him. Maybe that's an explanation for his struggles. I'm going to fire through the rest of these notes here. Alex Reyes has a pectoral strain. He's going to miss at least 2 to 3 starts in the minors. Corey Seager could be back right after the All-Star break. The All-Star game's on July 9th this year, by the way. Corey Kluber could be cleared to resume throwing soon. Carlos Carrasco played catch on Monday, so those guys are making some progress. Brendan Rodgers is on the IL with a shoulder injury. Should we pick up Garrett Hampson, Scott?
Nah, he hasn't really shown much of anything.
Alex Wood has a sore back. Tommy La Stella hit a home run the other day. It was an inside the park home run. Tommy La Stella, I'm not giving you credit for that. Yoan Moncada has a bruised knee. Bryce Wilson is starting today for the Braves. Did you pick up Bryce Wilson in any of your leagues, Scott?
I didn't, though there's a case to be made for it. He was a top 100 prospect for basically every publication coming into the year. ZRA is close to 4 at AAA, but it was like 250 over his past 8 starts in it. Really low walk rate. There's upside there, and you pursue anyone with upside in this pitching environment, but I would be surprised if he came up and dominated. There's some shortcomings, you know, not a very deep arsenal, etc. So we'll see how it goes, but you could make the case to pick him up, sure.
Chris Sale lost yesterday. All right, no decision. At Fenway. So Chris Mason on Twitter points out, Chris Sale's last win at Fenway Park was July 11th, 2018. The Red Sox don't return home until July 12th. So that means Chris Sale is going to go at least one full calendar year without a win at home. That's amazing. Yu Darvish, yeah. 0-5 at Wrigley Field. Eddie Rosario, day-to-day with a sprained ankle. Noah Syndergaard's going to start against the Braves on Sunday. Andrew Benintendi said he has heavy legs. John Means is going to start at Cleveland on Friday for Baltimore. Some Dodgers news. They are reportedly interested in Felipe Vasquez, according to MLB.com. They are also using a 6-man rotation with Tony Gonsolin pitching yesterday, and it did not go well for him. Go ahead. What does that mean?
To bring up your point from earlier, I mean, if the Dodgers got Vasquez, presumably it'd be to set up for Jansen. So That's another reason to put Kimbrel ahead of him.
Yes. So what about the 6-man rotation, though? Yeah. Like, they went 6-man. Is it just temporary? Are they going to... Do we have any more information about Stripling and Arias?
I haven't seen anything. Neither seems stretched out enough. Like, the piggyback situation seems like a good idea for them until they get more stretched out, if they are looking to stretch them out even. So I haven't seen anything more about that.
Okay.
But, yeah, it's just something we're going to have to watch for.
Gio Gonzalez had a setback with his shoulder. Jordan Lyles could start at Milwaukee this weekend, and Mike Soroka will start on Friday for the Braves. He will make that start. All right, Scott, let's talk about some hitters. We're going streaking with some hitters who are hot right now. Give me a quick thought on all these guys. Yasiel Puig, plate discipline still bad. That's a little concerning. 3 walks, 20 strikeouts. Buddy has a 970 OPS with 7 home runs and 4 steals in the month of June. And Yasiel Puig, quick thought.
Remember when we got traded to the Reds, we were excited and like, this is a potential 30-20 guy in this environment. And he's been on a 30-20 homer pace. And yet, I still think most people are underwhelmed. That kind of speaks to the environment. But now he's trending the right direction. I think he's in points leagues, maybe a little less than must-own, but everywhere else, definitely must-own.
All right, that's Yasiel Puig. Domingo Santana, just going to steal this right from the AP, from the Associated Press. Domingo Santana has a hit in 19 of his last 21 games. He's batting .337 with 5 doubles, 7 home runs, and 18 RBIs in that stretch. A 1048 OPS for Domingo Santana in his last 21 games.
Yeah, he's good. He's good. The high strikeout player always makes me nervous. He's on pace for like 200. But the quality of contact is so high that all the expected stats pretty much line up with the real stats. And it's harder to justify him as anything less than a must start.
Jeff McNeil, 82% owned, homered and doubled yesterday. Been on a little bit of a home run binge. He's got 4 in June. He has 6 on the season. But Jeff McNeil's batting .351, only 29 strikeouts. Last year he batted .329. Thought on Jeff McNeil.
He is for sure a 300 hitter, I think, as little as he strikes out. Is he a 350 hitter? That's going to be hard, a difficult standard for him to meet. But I suppose it's not outside the realm of possibility if he continues the recent uptick in home runs. He has 3 in his last 9 games, and he was definitely a home run hitter in the minors last year. It's kind of surprising he hasn't shown much power in the majors, you know, with the juiced ball and all of that. My guess is the numbers get worse from here, not better. But if there is a power surge, that obviously changes the equation.
All right, look, he's a guy who doesn't strike out. He's leading off for the Mets. I think in points leagues, Jeff McNeil might be sneaky valuable. You know, he might be a top 10 second baseman, and people wouldn't really value him that way. Like, I'd rather have him in any format, Scott. I'd rather have him than Robinson Cano. How about you?
Yeah, definitely.
All right, how about McNeil or Kevin Biggio?
I prefer Biggio there because there is clearer power potential. There's some speed. I would expect McNeil to hit for a higher average, definitely. But Biggio is an outlier in fly ball rate, hard hit rate, walk rate. And this is the makings here of an OPS monster. You know, he might not be better than a .260 hitter, but I think we're going to see the home run pace improve for Biggio in a meaningful way.
Yeah, and maybe some steals as well. Lourdes Gurriel Jr. homered twice against the Yankees yesterday, and since being recalled on May 24th, he was already the number 5 shortstop in points, number 2 in Roto before yesterday. I didn't run the numbers again this morning, but that was before his 2-homer game. I mean, he has been outstanding. Lourdes Gurriel Jr., he's 76% owned. If you look at the best shortstop since he's been called up, though, he has by far the worst plate discipline. But what do you think about Lourdes here? Is this a legit breakout?
I think it's mostly legit, yeah. He might be a little ahead of what's a realistic pace now, but I think he'll be able to sustain around a 30 homer pace, if not better. And the bat skills are good enough that he should help in batting average too. I don't know if shortstop's going to be the most likely place you play him because that's become such a deep position, but he's multi-eligible. I think he's eligible at both second base and outfield as well. So at one of those spots, you could find a spot to start him. And if it's a, you know, if it's a shallow lineup league where you happen to have great hitting and can't find a spot to play him, he's still a nice option for your bench.
Well, but
somebody who can fill in at any of those spots if somebody gets hurt.
Why are we buying him? Because like he has a 715 career OPS in the minors. He wasn't even that good in the minors this year when he got sent down. He had a 787 OPS. Did have a lot of doubles. And now he's coming up and he's like, I don't remember getting excited about Lourdes Gurriel Jr. last year when he debuted for the Blue Jays. He did nothing at the beginning of the season. He didn't do much in the minors. Now he comes back and he's on fire. Five straight multi-hit games, just been amazing. But, you know, like, why is this not just a hot streak for a guy that we really didn't have on our radar at all?
Well, I think he's a 25-year-old who is good at elevating the ball. I don't feel like the home run to fly. It's a little high now, but like I said, I feel like he's performing a little ahead of pace now. But when he first entered the radar, and I think he was on like a 40 homer pace at that time, what would translate to 40 homers if he was a full timer, the home run to fly ball rate wasn't drastically better than it was a year ago.
But it
is much higher now. But again, I think there's going to be some regression.
Let's forget about these metrics right now because it's a small sample size. And Chris talks about it. Like even the batted ball indicators can be deceiving because those go in streaks. You know, I'm talking about the whole picture of Gurriel. I'm asking, was there pedigree? Because I don't remember us being excited about him. If he's on a hot streak, then his indicators are going to look good. There's not enough, like, okay, maybe sometimes a guy gets on a hot streak, has a crazy high BABIP. Not always, right. But a lot of times, the guy's just hitting really well, you know? So, like, I just don't know that there's enough for me to buy into yet.
Well, he's less than 80% owned in CBS leagues, and which means he's obviously less in Yahoo and ESPN. So, I think the main question we're looking to answer now is how rosterable he is he? And I would say very. If you're talking about a sell-high scenario, trading him from the context that he's a stud for a more proven stud, I can get behind that. I don't know how realistic that is.
Yeah.
But sure, if you want to shop Gurriel for something something safer, you should aim very high. But I could get behind that.
Scott, let me get your quick thoughts here before we take a break, and then we'll finish up. We got a lot more to get to here. A lot more. Wow. J.P. Crawford, he's on fire. And Willy Adames, he has homered two straight games, three of his last five. Willy Adames, 197 with no home runs at home, 299 with nine home runs on the road, although those splits were sort of reversed last year. Do you have interest in these guys? Because Crawford's barely owned. Crawford's only 14% owned. That surprises me. Adames is 26% owned. Do you have interest in them?
Not really. It would have to be a deeper league. Like I said, shortstop is really deep. And J.P. Crawford, I don't think there's enough power there. You know, he may be a high BABIP type and can hit for a decent average, but I don't think there's enough power there. And I'm skeptical of the power for Adames too. So,
okay,
they're more deeper league material.
And the good news for Crawford, he has started 11 straight games batting second for the Mariners. We always like plate appearances. The bad news is he has a .227 slugging percentage against lefties. So if there are lefties on the schedule, you might not want to be considering J.P. Crawford even in those deeper leagues. When we come back, more hitters, thermometer, regulators, emails. There's no way we're getting to all of it, but we'll try. We'll be right back on Fantasy Baseball Today.
Shopify's already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. That's right. Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. With Shopify POS, you can accept credit cards, mobile payments, and every other major payment method, all with low fees and transparent pricing, starting on day one. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/MLB podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/MLB podcast to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/MLB podcast.
And the remainder of the show is brought to you by Micro Machines. Scott, double dongs yesterday. Franmil Reyes and Justin Bour. We already talked about Lourdes Gurriel. We know what the deal was with Reyes. He's been streaky, also doesn't play enough. But what do you think? 71% owned. Is that justifiable for Reyes? 22 home runs this year. Wow.
There was kind of a mass exodus from Reyes when he had that stretch where he started one game at 6, but he started 5 of 6 again. I think there's definitely a ton of power there. You know, I'd prefer somebody like Gurriel to him, but I think that ownership percentage is appropriate. I don't think it should go down from there.
And I'm just going to say, like, keep Justin Bour on your deep league radar. He's only 4% owned. He doesn't need to be more than that. But he went down to the minors. He fixed his swing. And Justin Bour has a 913 slugging percentage. Slugging. Since coming back. And if they're really serious about winning, I've got to think that he's a better player than Albert Pujols at this point. So, you know, we'll see. Do you think any of these guys are earning more playing time? Dominic Smith homered again. Danny Santana, 5 home runs in his last 7 games. Willie Calhoun, 45% owned. He's actually started all but 1 game since coming off the IL, but Hunter Pence should be back maybe early next week. And he obviously, you know, Danny Santana's in that mix too. Jake Lamb just came off the IL and started. He's more of a thorn in the side of Christian Walker, if anything. And Jose Martinez has started 6 straight games. So these guys who are hopefully going to get more playing time, Dominic Smith, Danny Santana, Willie Calhoun, Jose Martinez, and then hopefully not Jake Lamb, but he might. You know, what do you make of this group here?
I think... Yeah, the Calhoun situation is interesting. I'm trying to figure out who would play center field other than Delino DeShields when Pence is healthy.
I think Gallo plays sometimes in center field.
Yeah, that's true. Gallo could play. And he just returned to the lineup yesterday, or 2 days ago, so that's why he's not showing up here. But yeah, okay. So even so, that would make Calhoun, Mazara, Chu, and Calhoun. Yeah, there might not be a spot for Calhoun. Which is sad because I think he's showing by far the most he's ever shown in the majors before. 2 doubles and a home run yesterday. A power hitter who doesn't strike out much is very interesting. But yeah, the Pence return may mess him up. Who else are we talking about here?
Dominic Smith. Would you rather pick up Smith or Jose Martinez if you were to take a flyer on someone who's first base and outfield eligible?
I would rather say Smith, I think, has a lot more upside at this point. And he started 3 straight home runs in all 3 games. Really high walk rate. Definitely the skills to be a good batting average source. If he is, if he's a power hitter on top of it, then he could be super valuable in fantasy. We just haven't gotten much indication the Mets are willing to play him regularly enough. 3 games in a row. Okay, that's a good start, but we'll see how long it continues.
Yeah, I think they need him, so get him in there. All right, let's do the thermometer, Scott. Let's see how concerned you are on this Thursday. James Paxton, 6 runs and 4 1/3, and not sure if he's going to be a 2-star pitcher next week. The Yankees, because they have the 2 days off today and tomorrow, I don't know what their rotation is going to look like, but and plus Domingo Herman is on his way back. But yeah, another bad start. He's got a 4.74 ERA. Looked pretty good the 2 previous starts, but the 2 starts before that were terrible. 0-10 on James Paxton.
So he got ambushed by the hammer yesterday, the Super Smash Brothers hammer. Gave up 3 home runs, which is going to be something that happens to most every pitcher from time to time. Paxton was actually behind last year's home run pace, despite pitching in a more homer-friendly environment. So what's concerning for him is that the good starts since coming back haven't quite been good enough. He's been limited to about 5 innings, and there's been some talk that maybe the knee's still bothering him. Aaron Boone said after this start he doesn't think it is anymore, but if we can't trust to go Paxton to go 6 or 7 innings when he's on, then when these starts come up, they're going to hurt a lot more. So I'm a little concerned about Paxton.
I'm concerned because of the knee. I don't care what Boone says. Like, I'm concerned because of the knee. And, he did pitch six innings at the White Sox. Then he pitched five innings against the Astros, but he threw a ton of pitches. It just wasn't efficient.
He was inefficient that start. So Boone may be right, but I think it's reasonable to wonder how many innings he's going to give you start to start because of that knee.
Jack Flaherty has a 4.75 ERA, 18 home runs and 85 and a third. Yowzers. 0-10 on Flaherty.
Worryometer, I'll go 4, I guess.
Okay.
I think this is just the reality now. Like I was saying for Paxton, there are going to be these starts where there's just so many home runs hit. Like, no matter how good the pitcher is, it may not even really be his fault. We historically have attached home runs to skill for pitchers. That's the basis behind stats like FIP. But it's a really scary world they're living in right now. And ERAs can go crooked very quickly. It's more a matter of, how many strikeouts is he getting? How good is his supporting cast? How good do his good starts look? Like, Zach Wheeler's kind of the poster child for that. ERA approaching 5, and yet he has so many good starts that it still feels like he's one of the he's among the best options. Most fantasy owners who own him, he's probably like their third or fourth starter. So that's, Flaherty's probably a little behind that, but it's kind of a similar situation.
Who would you rather have, Paxton or Flaherty?
Paxton.
Eugenio Suarez on the Worryometer. Suarez is only the number 17 third baseman in fantasy. He entered the month of June with a 901 OPS. He now has in the month of June, a 483 OPS. He's been terrible. So 0-10 on Eugenio Suarez.
Probably like a 3. I don't think I don't think his skills are a real issue. I just think it becomes harder to play him in shallower leagues given the surplus of third base options out there.
Right. And for someone who basically almost all of his value is home runs, considering that everybody's hitting home runs this year. I mean, he doesn't steal. His batting average might be fine. Last year he hit what? He hit .283. Okay, that's fine. He doesn't really feel as valuable anymore.
Yeah. But, I mean, he's going to be worse than last year, probably.
It's just a slump, though. So, it's like he was hitting really well. So we're not going to freak out on Suarez. Paul DeJong, it's the last 42 games now for DeJong. He has a 670 OPS. First 35 games, he had a 10-11 OPS. So within this stretch of bad games, he did have a really good week. It looked like he was back, and now DeJong is struggling again. I do like the fact that he's still walking. He's stolen 6 bases this year. Mm-hmm. In his first 2 seasons, he stole a combined 2 bases, first 2 seasons. So what do you think? Where are you on the Worryometer here on Thursday, the Thurryometer for Paul DeJong?
I guess if I went 3 for Suarez, I'll go 4 for Young, but DeJong. Kind of like you're saying. I feel like while he probably was performing over his head earlier, it's been an overcorrection now. I mean, his strikeout rate is still much better. His plate discipline as a whole, much better. He actually has a worse home run to fly ball rate now than he did last year, which doesn't make a lot of sense in this environment. I think he's probably going to get hot soon. But kind of like I was saying for Suarez, shortstop, there's so much depth there that it's, doesn't take much to move a guy out of the top 12 at a position. I think DeJong, even with kind of a more optimistic outlook, is outside of that group for me.
Yeah, but so obviously at this point, like, fantasy teams are going to be starting more than one shortstop in a lot of cases. Like, you have Gleyber Torres as your number 14 shortstop. Totally understandable given all the guys in front of him, but he's going to be starting in every lineup. Do you think Paul DeJong is the same way? Do you still think that fantasy owners are going to be able to start him rest of season and get good production?
Well, the advantage Gleyber Torres has is he's dual eligible, and the second position he's eligible at, second base, is deeper.
Well, I'm just saying in general, like, DeJong may not be a top 12 shortstop. That doesn't mean he shouldn't be a starting fantasy option. as a utility, you know.
He should be starting in the majority of leagues where he's out. He's not. His starting percentage should probably be a little lower than Torres's, because there are leagues so shallow that there's just no room for him. But he should be started in the vast majority of leagues where he's out.
Matt Boyd, 7 innings, 11 strikeouts. Beautiful, but 3 home runs against Texas. And now that's 10 home runs in the month of June in 29 innings. It's 17 home runs on the year. And obviously hasn't been as good in June as he was through the first 2 months of the season. He's got 2 starts next week at the White Sox and home against Boston. Worryometer on Matt Boyd.
It's only like a 3. I mean, he still has 11.4 Ks per 9, still 1.8 BBs per 9. If you remember back when he was at his best and just emerging, how legit is it? I said it's pretty legit. The one thing that we need to watch out for is there's going to be some home run regression. I think that's fully been realized now. His home run to fly ball rate, like most pitchers, is now a little higher than it was last year, which I think it's fallen into the range where we should expect it to be. So he has a 3.72 ERA now. It's probably going to finish about there. But in this environment, I don't think that's bad for a pitcher who gives you the kind of ratios he does.
Would you rather have Matt Boyd or Herman Marquez?
Boyd, I think, because Marquez has that weird home issue where it's not totally sure how much you should be starting him when he's at home, and that obviously hampers his appeal. But of course, Boyd has a very poor supporting cast and has a 5-6 record as a result.
Sure, yeah. Well, let's see. Herman Marquez is 8-3, even though he has a 4.29 ERA. Only 2 strikeouts at San Francisco yesterday, so that was strange. Mike Minor had a great start yesterday. Complete game, 1 run, 7 strikeouts at Detroit. Would you rather have Mike Minor or Matt Boyd?
I think Boyd, but Minor. Like, I feel like I've been the high guy on Minor on this podcast.
Good for you.
I still wonder if I'm underestimating him.
Maybe. I mean, it's weird for him to be this good. It's weird for him. Like, Cole Hamill struggled so much in Texas. Mike Minor is having a great year. He's gone 8 or more innings in 3 of his last 4 starts. I've watched him several times, and I like to watch guys that I'm unsure about just to give me a little bit more perspective, and I think he's pretty good. So like, he doesn't throw like super hard or anything, but I think he's a pretty good pitcher. I'm confident in Mike Minor. You called him a buy high a few weeks ago, and it was a great call. And I think he's gonna have a good year. Yeah. I don't think he's gonna have a 2.40 ERA, but I think he's gonna have a good
year. He's clearly like in terms of ratios that like clearly better than he was last year. I mean, it's a similar swinging strike rate to 2 years ago in the bullpen in Kansas City, where you take that to a starter. Yeah, it's going to be good. You know, 3 of his past 4 starts now, 8 innings or more. And that, like, I'm not totally sure how realistic that is from him. But obviously, if that continues and he has several starts this year where, 7 innings plus, he has some short starts too. So that's really what could be the differentiator for him, is if he takes on that huge workload with consistency.
All right, that's Mike Minor. Yeah, I'm just going to try to finish up the notes here, and then we're going to do regulators, and then we're going to read emails. Trevor Bauer, 6 2/3, 1 run, 12 strikeouts. Patrick Corbin, 7 innings, 1 run, 9 strikeouts. Both these guys bounce back. It's been 2 good starts in a row for Corbin. Of course, Corbin faced Miami and Bauer faced Kansas City, but Bauer threw 127 pitches. Like, give me a break.
It's a thing, man.
I get if there's one pitcher in baseball who probably can do this, it is him. But, like, come on, Terry Francona. You're scaring the hell out of me. It's 117 pitches almost every time out or more. 127 yesterday?
Yeah.
That is. In only 6 2/3. But it was a nice start. So good job, Trevor Bauer.
Well, he was talking about how he's a little concerned about it, too, and that, Bauer's driving a lot of that. And, Bauer's, we talked about it last time, but he's been, since coming into the leagues, and this is, good reason why he's with Cleveland now and not Arizona, is he has his own preparation routine that supposedly is, allows a pitcher to do this more. And he's been very hard-headed about it. And You know, so far he's been right, but yeah, it's a little worrisome.
And in the bullpen, A.J. Minter got a save yesterday, a four-out save. Both Luke Jackson and Anthony Swarzak had pitched three of the previous 4 days. Taylor Rogers got a save. He's clearly the best reliever to own in Minnesota, and he's 53% owned. He's really good. Roenis Elias got a two-inning save. Roenis Elias for the Mariners has 5 saves since June 12th. He has 8 straight hitless appearances. Hitless. So Roenis Elias is pitching very well. And he was good. He had a 2.02 ERA as a reliever last year. So and the ratios are much better this year. So he might be something there with Elias.
Yeah, he's the uncontested closer. And the only one who I think could contest him now is Hunter Strickland if and when he returns. If Elias is still pitching like this, that's not going to happen.
Raisel Iglesias, I think they just stopped throwing him in non-save situations. He gave up 4 runs in the 8th inning yesterday. And Matt Barnes blew a save. Brandon Workman had pitched 2 straight days. I do wonder if maybe we're trending in the direction of Workman getting most of the saves, but I don't think we're there yet. But it's just a name to know. Brandon
Workman.
That's... All right.
He's gotten 1 in a row, so...
Let's regulate. It's a Blake Snell question. All right, here we go. From Aaron, from Murderers Row, says, "Hey, Aaron, Ned, Brian, and Don. I don't know who those are. All right, please regulate this situation to set the level straight for waiver wire protocol." Blake Snell was spite dropped in our 12-team redraft points league. Wrong with you people. Our waiver order starts at reverse draft order, and whenever someone makes a claim, you go to the back of the line. The team with the number one waiver claim is non-competitive. He did the league a solid and filled the vacancy from a late dropout. He regularly goes days or weeks without looking at the league, and it's very plausible to think that this guy might not add Blake Snell. The team with the number two waiver wire priority is competitive, and adding Snell would increase their likelihood to win the league. Another competitive team lower in waivers saw this and alerted the non-competitive team with the number one waiver claim that Snell is now on the waiver wire and advised that this owner add Blake Snell. This was done publicly in front of the whole league. The benefit to the whistleblower is to ensure the competitive team with the number two waiver claim doesn't get Snell, bettering his odds at a title. Is this collusion, or is this an example of a strategic maneuver done out in the open that should be considered fair game? Scott White.
I mean, collusion. Obviously, the guy who's alerting the non-competitive owner is doing it for his own sake. But the non-competitive owner is, you know, you could certainly justify that he would want to pick up Blake Snell just like anyone else would.
I'm going to interrupt you, and you can react. I don't like, it's not collusion, but I don't like when other people tell other owners how to run their team. And I think this crosses a line, and I don't think you should have done it. I'm not sure there's anything you can do about it at this point, but I think it's foul. I don't think it's fair. I think it's foul. And I the only problem is he could have done this sneakily, but by privately messaging the guy, and nobody would have known about it maybe. But my general rule is, and I'd never do this, never. You should not tell other people how to run their team. That, to me, is crossing a line, selfishly. And I'm going to say it was bad etiquette. However, I don't think there's actually anything you do as a commissioner.
Ultimately, the other guy doesn't have to do it, though. I think it's underhanded. I think it's cutthroat in a way that probably doesn't reflect well on the guy doing it. But I don't... I think it would understandably frustrate everyone else in the league, but I don't see any like illegality here, you know?
Agreed. I think it's right. Like, it's kind of lame. I don't think you should do it. It's a demerit. And I think maybe you start a rule, put a rule in, do not tell anybody what to do. Do not tell anybody about players who want waivers. Do not tell, like, just stay out of it and manage your own team.
Yeah.
But it's
I
hard
think that's
to,
over legislating. But
oh, you. Hands off, Commissioner Scott White. you won't even let people put players on the IL before the season starts. You are an under commish.
In some leagues, I do.
Well, not
in some leagues I do. It just adds a lot of extra work for a commissioner, and I commission like a dozen leagues, so no, and I'll let them do it in every league.
Well, prioritize mine going forward. Okay, well, we'll read some emails tomorrow. I'm going to the city tonight to get some dinner with Chris Towers. We're going to get some awesome barbecue. Give us a shout out if you're in the city, New York City, that is. And yeah, for Scott White, thank you, Scott. Good show.
Sure, Adam, it was great.
Okay. That's it for Fantasy Baseball today. We'll talk to you tomorrow. See you later.